The Holy Gospel according to St. Luke, the 24th chapter. On the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in, he saw the linen clothes by themselves. Then he went home amazed at what had happened. The Gospel of the Lord. As Jesus was hanging on the cross, he breathed in deeply and he exhaled, and that was his last breath. His breath became air, and I'm wondering whether the morning air that the ladies were breathing into their lungs as they went to the tomb was made up in part of that same breath of Jesus. For these women, as they go to the empty tomb, encounter what it means to be the living among the dead. Living among the dead is very much related to the capacity of putting things to words. Notice how in the reading of the gospel text today that what is happening is put into words. It happens three times. The women see the tomb empty. They wonder what is happening. The two men in dazzling clothes appear to them and say, "He is not here. Why are you seeking the living among the dead?" They put into words this moment. But it's not only their words to which we are referred, but then we are recalling Jesus' words, how he mentioned that he would be arrested and crucified and raised on the third day. So that experience is put into words yet once again. And finally, the women go back to the apostles and others gathered together, and they put into words their experience. Perhaps it's because they were inspired, inspirited. They got it. And they had the capacity to put into words what they encountered. The men, not so much. It seems odd to me that it takes the men a lot longer to get it than the women, but maybe I'm interpreting that from a male perspective. Because most of the women in my life would tell me that they usually get it right away, and it takes me a little longer to get it. And so maybe it's because they're men. Whatever it is, notice that the men never put this event into words. Now, sure, the first group of men, when the women share the story, say that these must be idle tales, idle words that have no meaning. Peter himself gets up and runs to the tomb and runs back, but we never hear Peter speak. In fact, do you know how long it takes, according to the writer of Luke and Acts, for Peter to actually speak of the death and the resurrection of Jesus? It takes 50 days, 7 weeks. It happens on that day of Pentecost that we finally hear Peter speak, when he was inspired, when he was inspirited, when the wind of the Holy Spirit blew into his life, that he could put into words that same encounter. That this Jesus, who was crucified, has been raised from the dead. It's necessary for these significant moments in of our lives to be put into words, to be expressed by words, because words have significant power. It's Paul Kalanithi in his book, When Breath Becomes Air. Paul was a neurosurgeon and neuroscientist in California who wrote the book When Breath Becomes Air after he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, to put into words his experience of dying. And he talks about that moment when the neurosurgeon goes into the room and is surrounded by family members who are standing around their loved one, and he as a neurosurgeon knows that there's nothing more that he can do for the loved one. And he says, when there's no place for the scalpel, words are the doctor's only tool. Words of compassion, words of hope, words of encouragement. What Paul goes on to do at the end of his book is to talk about the birth of his daughter, Katie, that she was born just about a year and a half before he died. And he wanted some way for Katie to remember him, because he said that while his hope was that he would live long enough for the child to have a memory of him, he was convinced it probably wouldn't happen. And so he said, words have a longevity that I do not. And this is the message he wrote to his daughter before he died. When you come to one of the many moments in life where you must give an account of yourself, where you must provide a ledger of what you have been and done and meant to the world, do not, I pray, do not discount that you filled a dying man's days with joy. A joy unknown to me in all my prior years until the day you were born. A joy that does not hunger for more and more, but rests satisfied in this time, right now. That joy is an enormous thing. Do you know how much joy God takes in you? Do you know the amount of joy that stirs in the heart of God when God thinks of you? Are you aware of the level of celebration among the heavenly hosts when they all think about you being present in the world? Do you know that God finds you to be good and lovable and enough as you are now? Not because you've done anything to prove it, not because you've done anything to earn it, but because God says so. God puts into words this promise: you belong to God. I take joy in who you are, and I celebrate when you are part of my world. Those are God's words to you. If you would doubt that God means this, look at what God has done to accomplish it. We were lost to our own brokenness. We were lost to our own sin. We were lost to all the times that we have fallen short. But God, in compassion and mercy, has forgiven us through the death and the resurrection of Jesus. It's Christ's resurrection that brings about this new way of living. You, brothers and sisters, are the living among the dead. It was Ivan Ilyich who talked in the 1960s about institutional evolution. And he talks about sort of the cycle that institutions go through. And initially, and for the first part of their lives, institutions bring about great benefits to those that they serve. There's the rise of the institution and the way it benefits and helps culture. But eventually, the benefits of the institution flatten out and then begin to recede, and actually, he says, begin to reverse, so that the institutions are actually counterproductive to what they are hoping to accomplish. And so what happens is we end up seeing a criminal justice system that makes more criminals than it reforms. We see medical systems that unfortunately make people sick. I've had doctors say to me, we're going to send you home from the hospital before you get sick. It ends up with economic systems that make people live in poverty even though they are full-time with benefits, and it creates schools that make people stupid. This is what my neighbor says to his son every morning when he gets on the bus: don't come home stupid. Because the hands of teachers are so tied by all of our reactivity to what teachers are trying to do that they can't educate our children. So our institutions are working against what they're hoping to accomplish. And into this world, brothers and sisters, you are called to speak. You are called to use your words, for you are the living among the dead, and your words have power, your words have significance, your words can transform these broken systems. As someone who is living among the dead, you can just start to believe that you are enough the way you are. And if you can believe as one who is alive that you are enough the way you are, you can start saying, enough of this nonsense. Because you are the living among the dead. Because you are the living among the dead, you can listen to one another. Imagine that. Use these things God has given you. You can listen to one another. You can ask questions to learn more. You can even allow, God forbid, the possibility that if you stand with someone you disagree with, you might actually have your heart and mind changed. The reason we fight it is because we are afraid to have our hearts changed. But you are the living among the dead, and when you engage those who are different, your life might change. You are the living among the dead. You are the living among the dead, and so that makes you morally and ethically vigorous. None of these zero tolerance policies that are lazy and keep us from doing the hard work of deciding what is really good, because you are the living among the dead. You are the living among the dead, and so it's time for non-emotional decision making. Oh my God, I'm afraid we need to do this before the whole world falls apart, and what you do ends up causing the whole world to fall apart. Let's take the emotions out of it. It's not about whether we like it or not, it's about what is right. I like to eat chicken when I go to a restaurant. That doesn't mean the whole world needs to eat chicken. So why do we make our decisions the same way? We are the living among the dead. We are the living among the dead, and so we can seek out a community of diversity, people of different skin colors, of different races and backgrounds, of different economic backgrounds, of different genders, of different sexualities, of different ways of looking at life, a community of diversity that allows just perhaps the possibility of compromise in difficult situations because we are the living among the dead. We are the living among the dead, and so we can be willing to be accountable to what we do and say and hold others accountable. We are willing to admonish others who are breaking and violating others. We are willing to be admonished so that we can grow and become a better person. It takes a mature, strong person to hear the truth about themselves, but you can because you are the living among the dead. You are the living among the dead, and so you can do everything with excellence. Don't worry about perfection. There's only one person in the world who was perfect, and believe it or not, it wasn't me. It was Jesus. Perfection is a sign of insecurity. You're afraid of failure, so you do it perfect all the time, so no one will see that, God forbid, you might actually make a mistake. But guess what? We all make mistakes, and we will get over it, and we will learn from it, because we are the living among the dead. And you are the living among the dead, and so you can be vulnerable. You can own the moments when you're weak. You can own your flaws. You can own those times when you just can't make it work anymore. Because, brothers and sisters, you are the living among the dead. They might be my words, but it is not me saying it to you. It is God declaring it to you, that you are the living among the dead. So go out there and use your words and be the living among the dead. Amen.